Right, Representative. Oh, you're here. Welcome. All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a Joint Standing Committee of the Environment and Natural Resources. We are here gathered electronically today for the purposes of doing the state's business relative to the environment and natural resources. Let's remember that we will be patient with one another as we navigate how to convene electronically. We've gotten better at it over the last year. We're going to hear public testimony for three bills, and we're going to go in this order, 1872, 1875, 1911. And then we'll, depending on how the timing's going, we'll either jump right into work sessions or we'll take a lunch break and then we'll dive into work sessions in the afternoon. And we're going to have a work session on 1429, 1639, and then I believe we're going to reconsider 1835, which was the mountain bike trail bill from last week. So that's our schedule for today. And let's go ahead and move through our issue and let everyone have an opportunity to introduce themselves. Representative Ziegler.
Good morning. I'm Representative Paige Ziegler from Waldo County. I represent the District 96, the seven towns of Belmont, Liberty, Lincolnville, Montville, Morro, Palermo, and Searsmont.
Well, Representative Bell.
Good morning. I'm Art Bell. I represent House District 47, soon to be renumbered to some other number that I can't remember. I represent Yarmouth, Shabik, and Long Island, and good morning.
Representative Dudera.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Vicki Dudera, State Representative for District 94, which are the three towns of Islesboro, Rockport, and Camden, home to the Toboggan Nationals.
Fun. Representative Gramlich.
Good morning. I am Lori Gramlich, and I represent House District 13, soon to be House District 131, which is the lovely seaside community of Old Orchard Beach.
Representative O'Connor.
Good morning. I'm Beth O'Connor. I represent the individuals of House District 5, which is Berwick and part of North Berwick.
Representative Hanley.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Hanley. I represent District 87, which is the towns of Pittston, Alna, West Cassett, and Randolph.
Senator Bennett.
Good morning. I'm Rick Bennett. I have the honor of serving 13 towns in Western Maine, in Cumberland and Oxford counties, the beautiful Lakes region, and foothills to the White Mountains.
And my esteemed co-chair, Ralph Tucker, Representative Tucker.
Thank you. My name is Ralph Tucker. I have the privilege of representing the individuals of District 50, which is Brunswick. Thank you.
And I'm Stacey Brenner, Senate co-chair. I represent Senate District 30, which includes all of Gorham, part of Buxton, most of Scarborough, and Scarborough Marsh. And we're also joined by Marianne McMaster and Dan Tartikoff. Marianne's our clerk, and Dan is our OPLA analyst, and we're always grateful for their support. And we're going to open up a public hearing for LD 1875, an act to address perifluoroalkyl alkyl and polyfluoroalkyl alkyl substances pollution from state-owned waste disposal facility. And our own Representative Ziegler is the sponsor. Before you start, though, we had a few folks join us. Representative Bloom, you introduced yourself. Representative Boyle, if you could introduce yourself to the committee or to the public.
Good morning. I'm Representative Jim Boyle from representing parts of Gorham and part of Scarborough. Good morning.
All right, Representative Ziegler, I'm going to pass it over to you.
Thank you, and good morning again. Good morning, Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, and distinguished members of the Environment and Natural Resource Committee. My name is once again Stanley Page Ziegler, and I represent District 96, consisting of the towns of Belmont, Liberty, Lincolnville, Montville, Morrill, Palermo, and Searsmont. And like Representative Bill, my district will also be changed. I am writing to support LD 1875. This committee has been involved in bills dealing with the effects of PFAS, and as a committee, we are well aware of the negative health aspects it poses. We have seen the farming, hunting, and fishing communities worry about the health and economic repercussions. There are options to remove PFAS from leachate. LD 1875 would require the treatment of leachate from active state-owned waste disposal facilities to reduce the concentration of PFAS to the extent feasible with available technology prior to its shipment to a wastewater treatment facility, or to send the leachate to a facility that has necessary technology to reduce the concentration of PFAS. When I submitted my testimony, the next sentence is no longer valid. And I have an amendment dealing with that that we just put in yesterday. This just came in the last yesterday. So those of you who have my testimony in front of you, I'm not going to read that sentence. Currently, the leachate from Juniper Ridge is processed by a facility releasing into the Penobscot River. The impact of this on the river and its fish have been significant concern. We must ensure that our state-owned landfill follows the best practices for disposing of its leachate. And that means ensuring it is appropriately treated for PFAS, either on-site or at a specialized facility. Federal funds were recently secured in the FY22 Interior Appropriations Bill to install a specialized treatment system for PFAS waste at Ansett Madison Wastewater Facility, which according to the conversations had with Anson Madison, they will meet those needs. The technology is new, but they're working on it. As mentioned, some of the leachate from Juniper Ridge ends up in the Penobscot River. The Penobscot Nation depends on the Penobscot River for many things, including the fish in the river to help feed their families. They have asked for our help in making sure that their community is not impacted by exposure to these toxic chemicals. We can't wait for the federal government to take action, as they haven't been proactive on this issue. Maine needs to develop its own plan of action. There are other landfills in our state that need to be regulated concerning leachate discharge, and this bill will help develop an approach that can be used in those regulations. I sent my friendly amendment to our analyst, and I would like if Dan could speak to that at this moment, or at least share the screen and show that amendment. Is that possible?
Dan, are you available to walk us through Representative Ziegler's amendment?
I can screen share it, but I didn't produce the amendment, so I couldn't speak to it.
Can you go ahead and screen share then? It's not happening?
It might take just a second.
Okay.
You'll have to pull it up and then.
Sorry, I was not prepared.
That is very unusual. This amendment.
There you go, Representative Ziegler. Can you see it?
I can. Can everybody else see it?
We can. Yep.
This amendment came about, and there was, and the DEP and I think Sarah Woodbury will discuss this. This came late into conversations we had right before the weekend, and it's just in the wording of the bill. And it reduces the amount of work that the DEP would have to do in coming up with the necessary rulemaking. And I'd rather have them speak to it. I mean, if you want, I can read it, or otherwise I assume everybody here has probably read it as I spoke. Do you want me to read it?
No, I think probably what would be more effective is to have the DEP walk us through their thoughts on the amendment, and perhaps also Sarah Woodbury, since the production of the amendment came in concert with those two folks.
So in other words, Senator, you're taking me off the hot seat, and I appreciate that.
You're so welcome. All right, so Dan, we'll end that screen share. Does anyone have any questions for Representative Ziegler? All right, not seeing any. Thanks for bringing this forward. And I believe next up, we're gonna bring in Mr. Kavanaugh. Let's see. Welcome back.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Isn't it customary to, as a point of order, to have proponents of the bill speak before opponents?
We've always had the sponsor and then the department.
Well, he's an opponent. I prefer to listen to proponents first, but whatever you choose. Thank you.
I'd like the department to speak to the amendment.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
So having just heard the amendment, if it's okay, I'd like to just read my testimony. The majority of it is still relevant, and then I could address the amendment at the end of the testimony.
Thank you. Okay.
Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, members of the committee. I'm Brian Kavanaugh. I'm the director for the Bureau of Water Quality at the Department of Environmental Protection, and I'm speaking in opposition to LD 1875. While the department agrees with the overall intent of this bill, that is to provide appropriate treatment of landfill leachate for PFAS substances, we believe it is not currently the right approach for several reasons. The bill requires the department to adopt rules that would specify treatment technology requirements and allowable concentrations of PFAS substances in leachate to be applied at state-owned landfills, and treatment technology requirements and allowable concentrations for treated effluent and residual sludge to be applied at a wastewater treatment plant. Establishing these requirements via department rulemaking would be a very significant undertaking. It would involve researching multiple technologies and how they might be applied for pretreatment at state-owned landfills and for effluent at wastewater treatment plants. The department does not have the capacity to do this work with existing resources. This type of standards development is exactly the type of work that the Environmental Protection Agency has historically done for a wide variety of pollutants and is currently doing for PFAS. The EPA has stated in their PFAS Strategic Roadmap Commitments to Actions 2021 through 2024 that they are developing and researching the potential for effluent limitation guidelines to limit pollutants from certain sources. They are currently conducting detailed studies on facilities, including landfills, where EPA has preliminary data on PFAS discharges. EPA expects these studies to be complete by the fall of 2022 to inform decision-making about potential future rulemaking by the end of 2022. In addition, EPA has committed to publish final recommended ambient water quality criteria for PFAS. Criteria to protect aquatic life are scheduled for the winter of 2022, and criteria to protect human health are scheduled for the fall of 2024. Once published by EPA, the department is committed to adopt these criteria into our toxics rule, Chapter 584, as quickly as possible, and then establish PFAS limits for licensed discharges as soon as possible thereafter. This will affect all licensed wastewater discharges likely to discharge PFAS, not just those treating landfill leachate. While the above timeline would likely result in license limits being established sometime beyond the compliance date of July 1st, 2025, proposed in the bill, using EPA standards has several advantages. It would eliminate any duplication of effort between the state and EPA. It would base the standards on the same methodology used by EPA for other pollutants, and it would eliminate the risk that Maine might develop a standard less stringent than what EPA might develop. In addition, it would allow the department to focus on the important work that is necessary to prepare to implement EPA's ambient criteria once they are promulgated by EPA. This involves conducting ambient sampling to acquire background levels of PFAS in Maine's waters, developing a program to acquire PFAS effluent data from all wastewater discharges likely to discharge PFAS, and analyzing and managing this data so we are ready to develop discharge limits as quickly as possible. In addition to the above, the department notes that the hard deadline of July 1st, 2025 could have unintended and potentially significant consequences. If for whatever reason, the state-owned landfills were not able to provide the required treatment, and if there were not wastewater treatment plants that could provide the required treatment, there would be nowhere in Maine where leachate from state-owned landfills could be legally disposed of. It is worth noting that currently there are no wastewater treatment plants in Maine that have advanced treatment for PFAS. There is one district facility that is under design and may be operational by 2023. I'll note there's a typo in my written testimony. That date was 2024 in the written testimony. It should be 2023. The department is not aware of any other wastewater treatment plants that are currently designing for PFAS treatment. Further, a timeline of approximately 3 years for the department to conduct the necessary research and complete rulemaking, and then for the landfills or wastewater treatment plants to fund, design, and construct the PFAS treatment facility seems tight. In summary, the department supports the goal of this bill to ensure appropriate treatment for leachate as soon as possible. However, we believe this will be best accomplished by implementing EPA standards in a timely manner rather than conducting the very labor-intensive and redundant work of developing standards that are unique to Maine. Be happy to answer any questions now or at the work session. Thank you.
Great. Mr. Kemmer, can you speak to the amendment?
Yes. So the amendment is to require a treatment level of 20 parts per trillion, which is the drinking water threshold. And that would certainly eliminate the department's concerns about rulemaking and the workload for the department to develop that would be established in the bill. I guess I would just note that generally speaking, wastewater treatment facilities are not required to treat any pollutant to the drinking water standard because discharge limits through in statute allow for some reasonable opportunity for dilution and diffusion with the receiving water. That being said, the one facility that we've dealt with so far, the Anson-Madison Sanitary District, they're the ones that are kind of leading the charge on this. They are moving ahead with an engineering firm to design and potentially construct a PFAS treatment facility at their municipal or district-owned wastewater facility. We met with them several weeks ago at their request because they wanted to know how they would be regulated at this point in time. There are no EPA ambient criteria yet. And from a regulatory standpoint, it's quite difficult for us to be able to advise them on what limits they would need to meet in this new facility they're building. So we discussed that quite intensely in the department. And then we met with Anson-Madison and their representatives and we talked through the issue. And ultimately, the guidance we gave them is in this interim period before EPA establishes their ambient criteria, which is what we always use to establish permit limits at treatment plants. We advise them that in the interim, they should meet the 20 part per trillion threshold because that was the only threshold we really have at the time. There's fish tissue action levels, which are hard to translate at this point back into permit limits. But there is the designated use of drinking water for waters of the state, and there is this interim threshold of 20 parts per trillion. So we told them conservatively and prudently, we're advising them to design for 20 parts per trillion. That was a lot less than what they thought they would need to do. And there are implications to that level of treatment in terms of the design of the facility. There's a lot given the different technologies that could be used for this particular facility, it means they need to treat much more of the wastewater at a higher level. It likely means there will be much more change out of the filter media and more to be disposed of, and a cost difference from what they had originally entailed. So moving forward, we don't envision that wastewater discharges would be limited at that 20 part per trillion threshold. It would be based on EPA's ambient criteria. That's the allowable concentration in the receiving water to protect aquatic life and to protect human health. And then we work backwards from there, looking at all of the discharges along the river shed to ensure that those concentrations are not exceeded. And we have to create an allocation essentially amongst all of those discharges to establish end of pipe limits so that interim standard is not, or that ambient threshold is not exceeded. So the 20 parts per trillion, I would say, is a fairly conservative standard. One thing to consider is if, I guess there's two potentials. EPA is going to be developing their own criteria, it sounds like, for landfills. That's not certain, but it seems to be the direction that they're headed. If EPA develops a standard that's more stringent than 20, which is possible, then the landfills or treatment plants would need to go back and do more. If they establish something that's less stringent, then potentially more money was spent on the construction of the treatment system than was needed. So that's kind of the dilemma of moving forward previous to EPA, is you don't know where they're ultimately going to end up, and it could be more or less stringent, and there's probably financial or technical implications to that potentially.
Representative has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh. So there's three aspects to all of this. It's assessment of the what is the problem of PFAS in our environment currently, and then what are the limitations that should be, what assessment of the limitations should be. And the third thing, which I don't understand as much, is we mentioned the technology. You know, there's a lot of, so the only, is there really an established technology that will work for removing PFAS, or is it in development, or are there options? Where are we at with that? And if someone could go a little more deeply into what is the technology that will remediate PFAS pollution, I would like to know a little bit more about it. Is it bioremediation? Is it filtration? What exactly is it?
Let me just pause for a second. So can we keep that specifically to technology that would treat leachate? Because that's your question could get broad in terms of how we remediate PFAS. So Mr. Kavanaugh, perhaps you could address that specifically for leachate.
Sure. First, I'll say I am no expert in this. This is an evolving science, an evolving engineering. There are treatment technologies that are in use around the world. I can just tell you what I've learned from talking to the engineers for the Ensign Madison project. Generally speaking, it's some sort of advanced treatment that would use activated carbon or different types of resin materials as a final filtration. And there's other pretreatment steps prior to that also potentially. You know, some of it has to do with the characteristics of the what you're treating, whether it's leachate or wastewater, how bad that may be, different PFAS that exist in that, how clean that is to begin with in terms of solids. The more solids that are in the wastewater, the more chains out you'll need on your back end. So it's a complex and evolving science, and I would expect over the next several years it's going to evolve further. And I would also say it takes a great deal of expertise to design these, and there's probably not a lot of facility or engineers that are really focused on this to a high degree at this point. There are some, but not a great many.
Representative Gernlach.
Thank you, Senator. And thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh, for coming and for your testimony. I don't think that anybody on this committee or anybody listening needs to be reminded of how terrible PFAS is. One only needs to look at the testimony of Mr. Fred Stone and his farm to understand the severe implications that PFAS has. I am not convinced that waiting for the Environmental Protection Agency to address this is going to help to remediate any of this. And if we know that PFAS is so terrible and that it is in leachate, and you've identified that you don't think that the tenets of what Representative Ziegler outlined in his bill is the right approach, what then is the right approach? Because I don't feel that we can continue to kick the football down the line any longer. The time is now to address this, particularly for our Indigenous peoples who rely on sustenance fishing in the Penobscot River. It's well over time that we address this, and I'm curious what would then be the right approach.
The department's position is the right approach is to allow EPA to do their work, establish the appropriate standards. They're working on standards that may be specific to landfills, which would be a pretreatment standard. That would be a technology-based limit. And they're also working on developing the ambient criteria, which would serve as our basis to limit all. So we realize that waiting is disagreeable to many, but we think that is the right approach. That's the approach that's been in place for decades for all sorts of toxics that EPA has regulated successfully, and we have regulated successfully all of our toxics criteria, and we have well over 100 in our rule come from EPA. We rely on them for the science, and we adopt their science and implement those. And despite the waiting period, which seems untenable, that is our recommendation as probably the best path forward.
Follow up if I may, Chair. I presume that's a yes.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much. I understand the department's position, Mr. Kavanaugh, but we have been reminded continuously that waiting for the federal government to address many of these issues, which impact not only is the state of Maine, but the country in terms of not only just PFAS, but other toxins, has not always been the right approach. And I think it's incumbent on the state of Maine to lead, as states have had to do over the years when addressing these issues. I think waiting for the EPA to come up with standards when we have the capacity to do that, and we've done that in other issues relative to PFAS, I just can't seem to understand why we would not want to move in that direction. So I guess that's more of a statement rather than a question, but I'll look forward to working this through more in the work session. Thank you.
Representative Ziegler.
Yes, thanks. And thank you for being here, Mr. Kavanaugh. I want to echo, Representative Gramlich's concerns. Other states are working towards this because we can't wait for the EPA. I'm sorry, the time frame is really getting longer and longer as they want to deal with this. We have a possibility of dealing with this now, and I think we should move forward with it. Generally speaking, more and more landfills are going to be receiving leachate, or are going to be receiving PFAS within their soils and so forth that are coming there for after treatment. So we need to start with the state run Juniper Ridge and develop data and the ability to then deal with all this, all this soil, this contaminated soil. So I think we should start, other states are starting, and they're not waiting for the EPA. And I think this is a chance. We remove the financial part of the for the DEP. And I think in discussions with Anson Madison, I think we should move forward at this point. Thank you.
Isn't that so, Representative Ziegler? You're muted.
I think I asked a question in there about the other states, but maybe I didn't, but it isn't that so.
Yeah, I would love to hear about other states that have work going on around leachates. your colleagues in other spaces. If you have any information about that, either now or perhaps for the work session, that would be helpful.
We can provide that at work session.
Thank you. Senator Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand and appreciate some of the aspects of your testimony, Mr. Kavanaugh. But the fact of the matter is the Environmental Protection Agency at the federal level walked this issue for years. It hasn't been until the last couple of years that they've actually attended to this at all. And to rely on them to do our job is, I think, also untenable. And I would encourage you strongly to take some of your legitimate concerns about the implementation of this bill and work proactively to try to make it work in a way that you think will work better because will address some of those issues. But we, at the very least, rather than just putting off this entire issue until the EPA does or does not meet their action plan that they promulgated, I think, 2 years ago, I think that we should plan our own actions and then integrate whatever they come up with into those rather than just sit back and wait. There's a reason this is before an emergency session. Now, admittedly, not every bill that we will hear even today is necessarily what I would constitute an emergency. This one is. And, you know, we work for the Maine legislature. We're all Maine legislators. You work for the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. So I would encourage you strongly to move in that direction. I don't have a question. I have a statement. And my question is, please come back for the work session with something that works for you. Thank you.
Representative Dudera.
Thank you. Mr. Kavanaugh, I have to echo the words of my colleagues. And, you know, the fact is you look on the EPA site, they haven't updated their PFAS report for a year. And in your own testimony, I just want to find it here, where you say criteria to protect aquatic life is scheduled for the winter of 2022. So that's a year from now. Criteria to protect human health are scheduled for the fall of 2024. That's just crazy. We know how this is affecting people. We know how it's affecting our environment. And I would think it must be very tough for you to also be in this kind of a waiting, holding position. So I would hope that we can iron out something that works for our Maine DEP and get working on this. Thanks.
I recognize that our committee has strong feelings about PFAS. And so I'm appreciative of hearing all of your thoughts, committee members, but I want to redirect us in the form of questions towards our folks that are here testifying, if you don't mind. Are there any further questions for Mr. Kavanaugh? Mr. Kavanaugh, I have a question for you. Are there other examples of where the state has more stringent environmental regulations than the EPA?
I think maybe one area was with dioxin years ago, where we came up with our own approach of an above and below test in terms of levels of dioxin in fish. That was a fairly Maine-specific approach, I believe. In terms of other toxics, though, generally, I would say we've always adopted EPA's criteria. You know, we apply a Maine-specific, the human health criteria based on certain assumptions of drinking so much water from the receiving water and eating so much fish from the receiving water. And then we apply our own state-specific fish consumption limits, which are higher than EPA's recommendations. So while we adopt EPA's underlying science, we do modify them to be Maine specific with Maine fish consumption rates, which makes them more stringent. But I can't think of other toxics where we're more stringent than EPA's other than the dioxin issue. But we can look into that more.
Okay,
And is it unrealistic to think that we might set something now and then reevaluate it once all of those EPA regulations come back to decide whether or not it works for us or whether or not our own levels work for us?
Sure, certainly that can be done. I mean, you could reevaluate the number at a later date once EPA establishes theirs. I guess just one point to consider is if there's engineering and construction which has occurred, that it may or may not be sufficient to meet the new criteria, or it may be more than what was necessary. You know, I can tell you just from the one project we're dealing with, the Anson-Madison Sanitary District, they're at a cost of about $3.5 million for what they're looking at. That's a kind of a small to medium-sized POTW. I don't have any cost for what it would take for pretreatment at a landfill, but that just gives you some ballpark, at least for the one project in Maine, it's about $3.5 million for what they're looking at.
And when leachate is tested, is it a third party that's testing it? Is it the landfill itself that's testing it? How is it the DEP that's testing it? Who, what lab is running that test, and what's that? What is that? Can you tell me a little bit about that process?
Sure. That's really being managed by our Bureau of Remediation and Waste Management, but I believe under LD 1600, the landfills are required to sample their leachate, send them to an approved laboratory, and we're collecting and analyzing all of that data. We can get you more information on that at work session if you want more details on how that's working.
Representative Dudera.
Thank you. My question for Mr. Kavanaugh is, aren't our air radon levels more stringent than the EPA? I believe the EPA is 4 PCLs, and in Maine it is 2 for indoor air radon, something that I unfortunately deal with quite a bit in real estate. Thanks.
I'm not familiar with that. I couldn't say.
All right. Are there any further questions for Mr. Kavanaugh? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, so now we're going to turn to the attendee space. Folks that are here to speak in favor of the legislation, if you could raise your hand and we'll bring you over. Okay, first will be Adam Nordell and then Sarah Woodbury. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us here today. Both Adam and I have separate testimony, so I don't know if that's okay if we both go or how you want to deal with that.
Do you both want to offer them for this bill?
Sort of for both, in support of both. Okay.
So what would work best is we can go ahead and do that and just make sure you introduce yourselves as you offer your testimony. Thank you.
My name is Johanna Davis. I am testifying in support of both LD 1875 and LD 1911. My husband and I have a certified organic farm in Unity. We have been pouring everything we have into our farm since 2014. We have a 3-year-old son who was born on the farm and loves it here. We just learned that our farm was spread with sludge, twice from the Portland Water District and twice by the Kennebec Sanitary Treatment District in the early 1990s. Alongside this information, we have learned that the water that we drink and use to irrigate our crops is over 400 times the state of Maine's safety threshold. Maine's CDC has run blood serum models for me and my husband that show estimated PFAS levels somewhere around 250 times the level of the average American. What does this mean for our health? What does this mean for our child's health? Are we willing to keep putting future generations at risk? I think the answer should be no. Thank you.
Okay, Adam, you're next. And then we'll do questions for both Adam and Johanna together.
Thank you. Dear members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, my name is Adam Nordell. I live in Unity, where my wife Johanna and I run an organic vegetable and grain business. I testify today in favor of LD 1911 and LD 1875. Both bills are designed to close loopholes in the state's regulation of PFAS chemicals and prevent needless future contamination of Maine's precious water and agricultural resources. We cannot afford to risk the health of future generations of Mainers over a waste management expediency. My wife and I purchased our land in 2014 after farming on leased land for 5 years. We bought the land from another organic farmer who had recently been given a dire cancer diagnosis and needed to spend his last months with his children. We learned the quirks of the land, developed markets for specialty crops, and scaled up our production. In 2018, Johanna gave birth to our son, who lives immersed in the farm and drives tiny toy tractors through the dust in our greenhouse. We built upon the established infrastructure here and worked to improve the property. In 2021, we drilled a new irrigation well, built a wash pack shed, and a new 100-foot greenhouse. In normal times, our products are on the shelves in 5 retail stores, in the refrigerators and pantries of 100 CSA members, and in the homes of another 100 or so direct retail customers. We have an employee. The growth of our family and our business have been inextricably linked with this patch of ground. As Johanna mentioned, we recently learned that our land was sludge applied in the early 1990s. This information terrified us. We hired a private soil scientist to test our well water, soil, and our vegetable plant tissue for the PFAS chemicals. As Johanna mentioned, all 3 samples came back positive for a combination of the 6 PFAS chemicals regulated by the state of Maine. A localized soil sample read nearly 100 times over the state's screening standard. There are no safety thresholds for PFAS in vegetables. We are working with MOFCA, with DACF, with DEP and Maine CDC to run additional tests on our water, soil, and farm products. We've suspended all our sales while we wait for the results. We struggle to see a path forward for our farmland, our business, for our family. Unfortunately, we are not alone. There are going to be more farms and more rural Maine residents affected by this. Based on our experience with historic PFAS contamination through land-based spreading of sludge, we urge you to support both LD 1911 and LD 1875. No one can undo the historic contamination of our land, but we know enough now to turn off the tap. Thank you.
Thank you both for your testimony. Are there any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Bloom.
Yes, hello. Thank you for being here, two of you. I have you been offered or have you found out of any remediation for your contamination that may be available?
Only in the DEP is in the process of, we're on the list at least to receive a water filtration service for our home water.
But nothing about remediation of the contamination in the soils?
No.
What we're hearing from state agencies as well as from MOFCA is that the only scalable remediation is soil removal, which is, that seems impossible on a farm scale and not a realistic option.
So filtration is the only answer that you have at this point?
That's right.
Thank you.
Senator Bennett.
Thank you both for sharing your very horrible story with us. It really puts a reality to the issue for me, and I'm sure for others. Have you looked at any possibility of recovering some of your losses here through litigation? Is that viable? Or how are you dealing with that kind of liability overhang?
Yes, we sort of are at the beginning stages of talking with some lawyers. It's been a lot. Suddenly, all of this information and learning and talking with all these different departments and whatnot.
We only got our test results on December 23rd.
Yeah, so it's been very quick.
Christmas.
We're at the beginning stages, but definitely thinking that way, some kind of litigation.
Thank you.
Representative Gramlich.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you both for being here. And I echo Senator Bennett's remarks in terms of what you all have to deal with. You indicated that you got your test results just this past December 23rd. I'm curious what prompted you to have the test, and when did you initially have it? How long did it take for you to get your results back?
So we learned from one of our customers who is a registered Maine guide and received the letter from Inland Fisheries and Wildlife about landfilling venison. As a registered guide, she got curious about her business and started looking into the publicly available information on the DEP website, found the ArcGIS site. On the ArcGIS site, found a pin representing sludge application licenses.
Near us, not the pin wasn't exactly on our land, but it was near enough us that she alerted us to look into it. But we had not been contacted by the DEP. So we had to hire a private company in order to get tests or samples taken and tested. And that process was 15 business days from when it was sampled to the test results.
Thank you. And did you find that when you went to the DEP website relative to PFAS and testing and all of this information associated with this toxic chemical, did you find the information on the DEP website helpful, adequate, informative to meet what you were kind of looking for in terms of what you had heard from the Maine guide and getting tested?
I would say none of the available information anywhere is adequate for what we're facing and for what Maine is facing.
Thank you very much.
Representative Ziegler.
Yes, and thank you both for coming today. And I want the panel to know that they make an excellent product and you can make some wonderful, wonderful food from what they've raised on their farm. My question is to what Senator Bennett said in regards to litigation and being proactive for it. Have you seen any class action possibilities for litigation of other farmers that you would join?
Not of other farmers at this point. I think we have the distinction of being the first vegetable farm to be in touch with the DACF about this issue. We're not going to be the last. Since contacting them, we know several farms in our area who have received letters from the DEP or who are waiting for test results. But we're just a little bit ahead in terms of our knowledge. I know that there are some class action lawsuits in Fairfield for sort of household, residents, but nothing from farms at this point that I'm aware of.
I have a couple of questions for both of you. I'm grateful that you're here. Thank you. I'm wondering geographically how close you are to Hawk Ridge, the Casella composting facility, geographically.
I don't know specifically. I would say probably definitely under 10 miles, but
we're in Southern Unity near Freedom Village. Okay. And Hawk Ridge facility is in, I guess, in Unity Township. So northwest of us, a good ways.
And have your neighbors started to test their domestic drinking wells?
We notified them when we got our well results back because nobody had. And as far as I know, I don't know, I guess, at this point. At that point, we were the first people telling all of our neighbors. Uh-huh. I don't know if anybody's received any information from the DEP at this point.
Yeah, I know that one of our neighbors had varying levels of familiarity with the issue and varying levels of concern. One of our neighbors who has two young children requested testing from DEP and is in line for that process. The last we spoke to DEP, it sounded like they were developing an action plan for this site proximate to the two applications, the two licenses.
But hadn't done anything yet.
That was a week ago. They, since getting our private tests done and informing DACF and DEP of our results, we're in the system. DEP has been back to take follow-up well water tests to see what other particulate matter will be captured in the filter and what sort of filtration system we need. DACF has been out to collect additional soil samples in two other greenhouses on site and to collect product samples, everything available this time of year that represents our produce and grain business. And at that point, I guess that was a week ago that both agencies were out. And at that point, they hadn't reached out. They were developing the action plan to contact other residents, but hadn't yet.
Representative Boyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the two of you for your testimony. I really mean that folks like you are the reason we on the other side of this screen, the legislators, are in the business that we're in. It's why we run for the legislature. And it's very meaningful that the two of you have come in front of this committee with your personal story. I have four grandchildren about the age of your son. So I know it means a lot to me. My question is, so thank you, Madam Chair. My question for you is, if specific to LD 1875, let's say that this committee passes it and it goes all the way through and it becomes law. Can you describe for us how that will affect you both personally and your business?
I think we will be gratified to know that Maine is taking this problem seriously now, that here we are 30 years late on our land. But at this point, we're recognizing the historic damage that's been done across the state and is only beginning to emerge. There's going to be more information. There are going to be more farms. There are going to be more wells. We know that. And so it will mean a lot to know that we're taking the issue seriously and acting in a proactive way.
Any additional questions for Johanna and Adam? All right, not seeing any. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Senator Curry will be up next. Welcome, Senator Curry. It's nice to see you in an ENR this morning.
Thank you, Senator Brenner and Representative Tucker. I appreciate it. I'm not going to read my prepared statement. I've submitted that online. I wanted to be here in support of Johanna and Adam. They are constituents of mine, and I just wanted to say this issue is huge, and I am so happy that this community is taking it so seriously. Johanna and Adam reached out to me and let me know their situation. We spent a good amount of time in their sorting shed, freezing so we could be COVID separated, and their toddler was all bundled up in there. And the issue, Representative Boyle, I had that same moment sitting with them, that this is why I ran, this is the work I want to be doing, this is incredibly real. And I started out thinking about their farm. I started about this young couple setting up their farm, putting their passion into this, making conscious decisions to live a very healthy life and to share that, and the betrayal that this state-led program of what we call beneficial sludge has brought to them, you know, across time, this betrayal from 30 years ago, over 30 years ago, two owners ago on this property. And I started out about this betrayal around their business. And then the reality that this was their water and that it was not just their water and not just their land, but their blood, that for all three of them that we have betrayed. And the health of our farmers and the livelihoods of our farmers are just so important to me. And I know it's important to you as well. And I just want to highlight that for this committee, how important this is. You know, I my hat is off to them because very early on in this process, they made the decision to go public, to pull their products from the shelf, to tell all of their retailers. That's a very big business decision very early on in the process. And they did that because of their values, because of their principles. Wonderful folks. And I just want to support them and put my support for these measures. Again, these two measures are too late. I hope we will have, and I expect we will have further measures to support the farmers that have been impacted so that the legislature can be taking action for that. But that's not these two bills. I'm in support of these bills so we can turn off the tap and stop contaminating these farms. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Does the committee have any questions for Senator Curry? Thank you for joining us. All right, next up, Sarah Woodbury, and then Sharon Treat. Welcome, Sarah Woodbury.
Thank you. Yes, good morning, Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, and members of the ENR committee. My name is Sarah Woodbury, and I am the Director of Advocacy for Defend Our Health, and we are here to testify in support of 1875, which would require leachate from the state-owned landfill to be treated for PFAS before it is sent to a wastewater treatment facility. While it is not the only source, one source of PFAS contamination entering the environment that we can and need to address is from landfill leachate. Multiple studies nationally and internationally have thoroughly documented that there are high levels of PFAS in landfill leachate. The first known test of PFAS in the leachate from Juniper Ridge, reported earlier this month, confirmed that there is no exception here, with levels 20 times higher than the main standard for drinking water. And while a typical wastewater treatment facility is not equipped to remove PFAS that is present in leachate, this means that the PFAS introduced from leachate will end up in both the sludge and the effluent at a wastewater treatment facility, and that will either be sent to farmland or discharged into the river. Both are harmful, and there are options to treat both of these. The leachate can either be filtered on site at the landfill before sending it to a wastewater treatment plant, or it can be sent to a wastewater treatment plant that has been outfitted with the more advanced technology. As mentioned by the department, the Anson-Madison Wastewater Treatment Facility has been awarded both federal and state funds to develop specialized treatment for PFAS, and they have indicated to us that they are interested in helping with this issue. Additionally, and more importantly, the current way of dealing with the disposal of leachate from the state-run landfill, Juniper Ridge, raises serious concerns about the impacts on Maine's tribal communities, since the leachate is currently being processed by the Nane Dragons facility, which releases its effluent into the Penobscot River. The river is of particular cultural and historic importance to the Penobscot Nation, and toxic chemicals like PFAS threaten the tribe's traditional use of the river and their ability to utilize it for sustenance fishing. And I will kind of address the DEP's comments about EPA. And while they argue that rather than address this leachate from the state-owned waste facility, we should wait for the EPA or focus on just adding PFAS to discharge permits, we hope that this committee will agree that waiting on the EPA to address PFAS should be a non-starter in our state, given our unusually severe challenges to address widespread land and drinking water contamination, and quite frankly, the lackadaisical approach to the federal government has taken to this issue. In fact, Maine is far ahead of the EPA when it comes to dealing with PFAS contamination, and the EPA is currently only looking at two kinds of PFAS, PFOA and PFOS. Maine has already had standards on the books for more PFAS than that from our drinking water standard that was passed last session. Waiting for them now makes little sense. And the discharge resulting from the facility, which the state is directly responsible for, should be addressed. And finally, in terms of Representative Ziegler's proposed amendment, in conversations with the DEP regarding this bill, they indicated that as currently presented, it would require them to expend significant effort to develop rules to define appropriate technology or effluent standards. The proposed amendment removes the need for DEP to undertake complicated and resource-consuming rulemaking by having the legislature set the standards. It is also our understanding from conversations with DEP that the design goal of Anson-Madison will be able to achieve the drinking water standards for PFAS discharges. So we urge you to pass LD 1875. And the other thing I just forgot what I was gonna mention. In terms of what other states are doing, Senator Brenner, you had asked what other states are regulating. Yes, other states are regulating. Pennsylvania, Colorado, Michigan have all started to put policies in place that will regulate and set levels for discharge and leachate. So we're happy to share that information during the work session. And it's also attached to my testimony. So
thank you so much. Representative Gramlich has a question for you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Ms. Woodbury. With these other states that you've identified, do you know whether or not they have put forward standards that are more aggressive than what the EPA is currently doing?
So a couple of them have set them at the 70 parts per trillion drinking water standard that the EPA has, but I think it's Michigan is actually doing it at a lower standard, which is their drinking water standard. And the state of Maine disagreed with the EPA on the 70 parts per trillion for a drinking water standard and decided that that was too high. And we set our drinking water standard at 20 parts per trillion. So we believe we should follow what the state has already done in this area.
Thank you.
Representative Bloom.
Hi, welcome, Sarah. Do you have some insight on the cost or the most efficient technology that would be employed and the technology's limitations for what it can do? I understand there are three.
Yeah, I don't have a handle on the cost of it. But quite frankly, I mean, the answer, and I think Brian mentioned it, is the filters. Like in terms of getting PFAS out of leachate, the technology is filters. The technology is available. It just needs to be installed. And they have to, I mean, obviously they're engineers and they have to calibrate it to the different standards and whatnot. And it might depend on the number of filters and whatnot, but filters in terms of, you know, getting the PFAS out of leachate and things like drinking water, the answer is, you know, carbon filters and stuff like that. Now for, you know, what has happened to the, you know, Songbird Farm and Unity, who you just heard from Johanna and Adam, that's a different issue that, you know, filters in your soil are not going to work, but for things like leachate and drinking water, filters. That's kind of the answer at this point.
May I follow up, please?
Sure.
And so when we filter it out, we're taking out the PFAS and we're having the PFAS in the filtration matter.
Yes.
What would be the disposal method for that matter?
So unfortunately, they would have to be put in landfills. Like just in terms of general disposal for PFAS right now, they're not great options. The best of the bad options is landfilling, whether that's sludge, whether that's filters, because you're putting it back into a closed system. And for in Juniper Ridge's instance, my understanding is it's lined. And so there's at least a level of protection there. And though more of it would end up in the leachate, again, it would end up being a little bit of a circle, but it would take it out of our rivers. It would take it out of our, you know, out of the Penobscot River, out of, you know, the fish, all of that type of stuff. So while unfortunately it would end back up in the landfill again, at least that's somewhat of a closed loop and it's not ending back up in the environment.
Are there any additional questions for Sarah Woodbury this morning? All right, thanks for joining us. And next up is Sharon Treat. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, and members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. My name is Sharon Treat. I'm resident of Hollowell, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy in support of LD 1875. IATP is a nonprofit headquartered in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but we have an office here in Maine, and we work closely with farmers to promote local, sustainable, and environmentally beneficial agriculture and trade policies. We've been following PFAS issues across the country, and especially in Maine, where we've taken a strong interest in how PFAS contamination has harmed farmers and agriculture. As you've heard, landfills are known sources of PFAS contamination, and there's a significant body of scientific research finding PFAS in landfill leachate, which would be no surprise since PFAS are ubiquitous in a wide range of consumer products that end up as trash. In addition, with respect to the Juniper Ridge landfill, PFAS-containing wastewater treatment facility sludge is also landfilled. We also have DEP water monitoring data indicating a link between leachate discharges into Maine rivers and elevated PFAS levels in fish. Landfill leachate should be properly treated before being discharged into our rivers, full stop. This means, as 1895 would require, either treatment at the landfill prior to disposal at a wastewater treatment plant or upgrading those receiving facilities so that they have the technological capability to safely treat these wastes. Waiting for federal standards, which are still years from being promulgated, much less implemented, is not sufficient. Maine has the authority to move ahead on its own and should do so. And as one example, Michigan has already jumped way ahead of EPA to establish its own PFAS pretreatment requirements for industrial discharges to wastewater treatment facilities. And it did this like a year or two ago. If and when EPA finally acts, Maine can figure out the best way to integrate its rules into the federal standards. Juniper Ridge is a state-owned facility. Right now, its leachate is released into the Penobscot River, where it disproportionately impacts the Penobscot Nation, despoils traditional fishing grounds, and increases the risk of exposure to toxic PFAS chemicals. As a reminder, PFAS exposure has been linked to health problems, including kidney and testicular cancer, thyroid disease, infertility, and compromised immune system, including reduced efficacy for vaccines. Anyone relying on sustenance fishing, not to mention the added cumulative impact of eating wild game, which we now know is contaminated with PFAS as well, faces the highest level of risk. Maine has a moral responsibility to prioritize preventing future pollution from our state landfill, and I urge ought to pass on LD 1875. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions for Chair and Treat from the committee this morning? No questions. All right, thanks for joining us. Next up, I'm gonna bring over Nathan Saunders and Dan Kuznierz. Sorry about if I haven't pronounced that correctly. Welcome, Nathan Saunders.
Good morning,
Saunders, welcome.
Good morning, thank you for this opportunity to testify in favor of LD 1875 and LD 1911. Good morning, Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, and distinguished members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. I'm sorry I have the wrong committee name on my written testimony, my mistake, I'm sorry. My name is Nathan Saunders and I work as a professional engineer and senior environmental engineer for the State of Maine Drinking Water Program. I'm testifying today as a private citizen, not as a state employee. I'm on vacation time, and I would like you to know of my background as I testify. I'm testifying today to make the connection between PFAS pollution of the Maine environment and PFAS contamination of Maine citizens, specifically myself, my wife, my neighbors, and numerous other Fairfield residents. I live on Howe Road in Fairfield. I understand that there are now 190 or more private wells in Fairfield that are contaminated with PFAS above the 20 part per trillion enforceable limit. In March of 2021, I learned from the DEP Director of the Bureau of Remediation and Waste Management, David Burns, now retired, from a television interview of him, that PFAS well water contamination in Fairfield is likely coming from the sludge from the Kennebec Sanitary Treatment District that was spread on fields right across the street from my home from 1980 to 2003, and that's 23 years. I saw it spread on the nearby fields every year, and I thought it was manure. An additional material spoken of as a fertilizer was spread on these fields from 2006 to 2015, 9 more years. And that stopped 6 to 7 years ago. In January 2021, our well water was tested for PFAS and the results came back at 15,088 parts per trillion in comparison to Maine's enforceable limit of 20 parts per trillion in drinking water. And my wife and I have been drinking the water every day for 33 years. The DEP immediately installed a carbon filtration system which removes 28 PFAS compounds to non-detect levels, and I appreciated that. Please note, though, that there are more than 4,000 PFAS chemicals, and only 28 of which are part of the routine PFAS sampling done today. During 2021, we had 9 PFAS water samples taken at our home by the DEP on roughly monthly intervals. A couple samples were unavoidably missed. I attached a bar graph of this data to this testimony, along with my testimony. I'm hoping you have a chance to see that graph. The average PFAS level over 2021 was 14,832 parts per trillion. That's 742 times the enforceable limit of 20 parts per trillion in drinking water. Using Microsoft Excel, I added a trend line to this data, which shows a 12% decline in the PFAS level over the year's time. If the PFAS level in my well continues to decline at the rate of 12% per year, it will take 48 years for the PFAS level in my well to be less than the enforceable limit of 20 parts per trillion. It will take almost 70 years for the PFAS level to be less than 1 part per trillion. And I'll just mention that in other states, I'm aware that in New Jersey, they have enforceable levels of something like 13 or 14 parts per trillion and not 20. Even if these calculations are, and average calculations are inaccurate by 10 or 20 years, I will have to have a large carbon filtration system on my home's drinking water for the rest of my life. As a result of the drinking water PFAS contaminated water, as a result of drinking PFAS contaminated water for 33 years, according to the studies identified by the Agency for Toxic Substance Disease Registry, that's the ATSDR, my current blood levels for PFAS exceed the average PFAS levels of employees working for DuPont and 3M, the companies that made the PFAS chemicals. This means that I've received an industrial level of PFAS contamination of my blood while sitting in my living room. The ATSDR also lists numerous other health effects, and I have a link at the bottom of my written testimony for that report. There are several life-threatening and life-altering illnesses that have occurred near where I live. The contamination of my body has occurred due to the disposal of PFAS-contaminated sludge on fields next to my home. As you know, when rainwater falls on contaminated sludge, it creates contaminated leachate that enters the ground and the water table. LD 1875 and LD 1911 address the proper management of PFAS-contaminated sludge, compost, and leachate entering Maine's environment. Due to the life-impacting consequences to Maine citizens caused by the uncontained disposal of PFAS-contaminated waste in Maine over many years, I urge this committee to pass LD 1875 and LD 1911. LD 1875 asks that leachate from a solid waste disposal facility owned by the state, quote, be treated, quote, to the extent feasible with available technologies, unquote. This statement leaves flexibility on managing PFAS-contaminated leachate and waste material in a reasonable and financially responsible way. Both of these bills require rulemaking, which gives an opportunity for the public to input on the development of specific related rules, and both of these bills can be implemented without creating unreasonable financial burden on public ratepayers. For the health of Maine citizens, please pass LD 1875. Now, I will say I'm not disappointed with the DEP's response to this. It's very comprehensive. I'm testifying to influence a response to PFAS contamination and not let this opportunity pass by. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Saunders. And I'm kind of focused on this remediation part. And so you have this filtration system at your home, correct?
Yes.
And you, so you have to change out the filtration system on a regular basis?
Well, so far over the last year, we have not had to have the treatment changed out at all. It's worked very well. All the numbers are non-detect, and the DEP has at least stated so far that they will be doing that work. What's interesting to me is that if this level is above 20 parts per trillion for the next 48 years, we wonder and have heard rumor of how long the DEP would actually maintain that. But that's the drinking water. The land is, we live on a highly contaminated, industrially contaminated aquifer, and this has affected our land and our livelihoods greatly because of that. And I think the comment made earlier of turning off the tap makes all the sense in the world.
And just to follow up, but when we filter out these chemicals, they're still there. They're concentrated now in your filtration system. Do you have to dispose of that filtration system when you need to replace it in a proper way?
Well, I know that the treatment company that put in the filtration, because I've asked about this, they take the carbon that is expended, although I have not changed my system yet, and they dispose of it. Okay. I do not know how they dispose of that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Representative Ziegler.
Yes, thank
Point
you.
Point of order, Madam Chair.
What is that?
It is generally the rule of the committee that the sponsor of a bill doesn't ask questions or speak to the bill during the hearing.
And if, unless the chairs allow it, correct, Representative?
Well, as I said, it is the rule of committees that the sponsor of a bill remains silent while the bill is being heard.
Thank you for bringing that up. I addressed one of the chairs in regards to that. And
excuse me, I'm addressing the chair, and I'd like an answer from the chair if I may have that.
My understanding is it's not the rule, but it's usually the etiquette.
I take it then, Madam Chair, that you're going to allow any sponsor to speak at any time on their bills?
I think if the sponsor has a question of someone offering public testimony, I would permit it. Representative Tucker. Representative, you're on mute.
Yes, rule 304 and the committee rules read as follows. A committee member who is the primary sponsor of a bill and any member who testifies for or against the bill shall ordinarily refrain from questioning other witnesses. And the practice has been that you have to ask special permission of the chair and give some special reason why a sponsoring member should be able to ask a question. And it's the chair's prerogative.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Ziegler, do you have a special reason why your question should be?
No, I was under an assumption because of a conversation I had, and I will refrain from asking those questions because I feel the committee is asking very pertinent and important questions, and I don't think we need my addition.
Representative Hanley, thank you for your point of order.
Thank you for your response.
Are there any other questions? All right, not seeing any. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Dan Kuznierez, and then Kate Manahan and Mark Hyland will follow.
Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, and members of the Joint Standing Committee of Environment and Natural Resources. My name is Dan Kuzniers, and I am the Water Resources Program Manager for the Penobscot Indian Nation. a position that I'm honored to have served for 29 years. I'm here today to testify in support of LD 1875, an act to address PFAS substances and pollution from state-owned solid waste disposal facilities. As you are likely all aware, PFAS contamination and its associated health concerns is garnering a lot of attention nationally and in Maine. I'm also a representative to the Tribal PFAS Workgroup, an ad hoc national group that works on PFAS-related issues facing Indian tribes across the country. I receive reports regularly of PFAS in wild foods, drinking water, and other media that tribes rely upon. And of course, here in Maine, all of the stories of PFAS in the Fairfield area. The Penobscot Nation is a riverine tribe that relies upon wild caught and collected foods for sustenance. This includes fish, wildlife, medicines, and plants that give tribal citizens nourishment and connects them to their cultural lifeways and identity. Clean water is of utmost importance to protect these practices. These are not recreational uses, but legally protected rights. To the tribe's dismay, we have learned from studies conducted by our Penobscot Nation Water Resources Program, EPA, other federal partners, and Maine DEP, that these fish contain toxic contaminants, including dioxin, furans, PCBs, mercury, and now PFAS compounds at levels that could cause harmful effects. In 2021, ATSDR, an agency of the National Center for Disease Control, completed a health consultation for the Penobscot Nation using fish tissue data from a 2017 and 18 EPA study of contaminant levels in anadromous fish that are now returning to the Penobscot River since the completion of the Penobscot River Restoration Project. In addition to the dioxins, PCBs, and mercury found in these fish, the study found several PFAS compounds. ATSDR concluded that the Penobscot members, children and adults who eat blueback herring, striped lamprey, and roe from American shad might experience adverse health effects from the levels of PFOS found in the tissues. As we have learned from the history of the events in Fairfield, sludge from wastewater treatment plants, when land applied, can have devastating consequences. These biosolids are now being sent to landfills, such as the state-owned Juniper Ridge landfill, where they are added to a wide variety of other waste that contains PFAS. While some of these PFAS compounds may be sequestered in the landfill, high levels of PFAS become concentrated in the leachate in the landfill. In the case of Juniper Ridge, that leachate is then trucked to the wastewater treatment plant at Nine Dragons Paper Mill in Old Town. Because conventional wastewater treatment plants are ineffective at removing PFAS, that PFAS is then discharged into the Penobscot River immediately downstream of the Penobscot Reservation, where it can accumulate in fish that tribal citizens and others eat. We know from recent testing that the Juniper Ridge landfill leachate contains PFAS 20 times that of the Maine drinking water standard. There's a lot of research being done throughout the country on PFAS and how it should be handled. Here are some of the things we know from this research. We know that there are high levels of PFAS in leachate from landfills. We know that conventional wastewater treatment is not effective at removing PFAS. We know that PFAS is persistent in the environment and has been linked to negative and significant health effects. We know that the general public is exposed to PFAS from a wide variety of sources. We believe that we should be taking every effort within our power to control PFAS, and that this class of chemicals requires taking a precautionary approach to prevent future contamination that we will all regret. Today, you may hear that EPA is working on developing standards for PFAS discharges from wastewater treatment plants, that we should wait until they complete this work. We've been hearing about this for a long time and are concerned that EPA is moving very, very slowly on this and believe that we should not wait. We believe that the state of Maine has the opportunity to be a leader by setting an example for industries and towns by establishing best practices to treat leachate for PFAS at state-owned landfills such as Juniper Ridge. It's important to remember that Juniper Ridge Landfill is owned by the state of Maine for the people of Maine. It is not owned by Casella. They manage the facility. If it is the will of the people of Maine to pre-treat the leachate to remove PFAS, then that request should be honored. If it is not cost-effective to treat on-site, the leachate could be sent to Anson-Madison Sanitary District, where they're constructing a PFAS treatment system to handle PFAS waste throughout Maine. If we ever hope to allow Penobscot tribal citizens to safely eat fish from their river, it's imperative the sources of contamination be controlled. We urge you to pass this bill to take an important step to control PFAS from Maine-owned landfills and to show Maine as a leader in controlling PFAS. Thank you for the opportunity to present testimony.
Thank you so much. Representative Gramlich has a question.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Kuzneris. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Are you saying that it was apparent that fish in the Penobscot River were determined to be contaminated with PFAS as early as 2017? Did I hear that correctly in your testimony?
Yes. Well, in 2017 and 18 is when the fish were collected. And then, of course, they had to be analyzed and, the results come back. So it was probably 2019, 2020 when we, had all those results back and could act on them.
Thank you. And so do we know why it appears that we really haven't addressed this issue? We've started doing at least preliminary testing about 5 years ago and certainly took some time to get the data back. So it's been several years since we've received the data. Do you have any insight as to why we have not addressed this issue?
It's one of those complicated issues. I mean, we're trying to, EPA and states are trying to figure out what the levels should be. And this study was done in a way to just collect the data to analyze it specifically for the Penobscot Nation to guide tribal citizens about whether or not, what are the risks from eating these anadromous fish that are returning to the river.
Just one more follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair. And you may or may not know the answer to this, but I'm curious, given what we have been able to determine relative to the fish in the Penobscot River, and knowing that it has adverse implications on our indigenous people's ability for sustenance fishing, are folks along the river who rely on fish in the river consuming the fish currently, do we know?
Well, there are advisories telling people that they shouldn't be because of the health implications of it. But we also know that because of the importance of it to the culture of the tribe, we hear from people that they still are. I mean, they want to exercise that right, that the important part of their culture.
Thank you, sir. So it just seems imperative that we address this as soon as possible. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Any other questions? All right, not seeing any. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time. Kate Manahan is next. You're on mute.
Good morning, Representative Brenner, Tucker Committee. Thank you very much for having me. I prepared and submitted testimony. My name is Kate Manahan, and I live in Kennebunk currently. I'm not going to read my testimony because I think you've heard most of it today. I'm a social worker by trade, and I happen to have lived in Fairfield on a farm when I was having babies. And then now we live in Kennebunk, where we were serving up PFAS water from Farmer Stone's farm. when they were developing bodies. So this is a really deeply personal issue for me. I'm so moved by the speakers today and also by the committee's respect for the people who have spoken. I also want to respect your time and very much appreciate how you are doing business during this time of COVID. I would like to take a moment just to say, we have some solutions. I like the idea of using the Anson Madison wastewater facility to actually filtrate the water. If we have the ability to purify the water before returning it to the Penobscot River, and we don't take that action step, that would raise really deep environmental justice concerns for me, which I've heard echoed on the board already, and I'm gratified to hear. If we can build a filter and we don't, would that just be considered neglect, or would that be outright violence to be poisoning the food of people downstream who rely on that? A filter was installed in my town's PFAS-tainted water supply when it was needed. I believe that was in 2019 in Kennebunk. I don't know the names of the filtration systems, but it has been done. And the people of the Penobscot Nation have been pleading for help as they're exposed to this terrible burden of environmental degradation and corruption of their way of life due to toxins being poured into the water from our leachate. So I am in strong favor of not waiting till the 2025 time that the EPA suggests to then start moving forward on filtration. We really can't wait. I think I agree with Lori Gramlich that the time is now. Thank you very much for hearing my testimony. And if you haven't seen it, there's a 6-minute video put out by Sunlight Media Collective on this very topic that I think could be edifying as well.
Thank you so much. Any questions for Kate Manahan? All right, not seeing any. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Next up is Bill Lippincott.
Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, distinguished members of the committee. My name is Bill Lippincott. I'm a resident of Hamden. I'm the chair of Don't Waste Maine, a coalition of people around the state advocating for responsible solid waste policies that protect the health of communities most at risk from negative impacts of landfill, incinerator, and other waste processing facilities. We've been concerned about concentrations of PFAS in landfill leachate because we know materials going into them, such as municipal and industrial sludge and oversized bulky waste, have high concentrations of PFAS. Now that the legislature has passed a law requiring the testing of landfill leachate, which I really appreciate the legislature doing, our concerns have been borne out. In the first Juniper Ridge leachate tests, results have come in at over 20 times the Maine drinking water standard. There's no water treatment plant in Maine that's currently capable of removing PFAS chemicals from landfill leachate. So right now that leachate is going into the Penobscot River untreated for PFAS. This law makes sense as far as it goes. But I've also had time to go over the first Pine Tree landfill leachate test results. And the results of that test are over 2,100 nanograms per liter, which is over 100 times the state water drinking standard. Even though the landfill has been closed, it's still generating a lot of leachate. And the Pine Tree landfill has not been taking in around 800,000 tons of new waste a year, as has Juniper Ridge. It's been closed for over 10 years, and it's been undergoing remediation for over 10 years now. But it's a highly contaminated, leaking landfill. That contaminated leachate is going into the Penobscot River untreated for PFAS. Leachate from the Crossroads landfill in Norridgewock is going into the Kennebec River untreated for PFAS. And I am hopeful that the Anson Madison treatment plant will come online to take care of that. But Yes, we need to require treatment of landfill leachate from Juniper Ridge. We also need to require treatment of leachate from the Pine Tree landfill and the Crossfields landfill. The chemicals don't know they're not from a state-owned landfill. They're just as toxic. So I urge you to support LV 1875. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time this morning. Are there any questions for Bill Lippincott? Okay, not seeing any. Appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Next up is Peter Blair and then Luke Sakura Flanders.
Can you hear me all right?
We sure can. Welcome.
Great. Good morning, Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, and members of the Environmental and Natural Resources Committee. My name is Peter Blair, and I'm a staff attorney with Conservation Law Foundation, specifically CLF Zero Waste Project. I've already submitted written testimony, so I'll try to be brief because I know you have a long day ahead of you. I would like to point that it's already been mentioned that Pennsylvania and Michigan have taken steps to implement the types of changes that we're seeing here in LD 1875, but there's also evidence from New England as well. In New Hampshire, Waste Management, which is the operator of the Crossroads landfill here in Maine, is already required to pre-treat leachate generated from its turnkey landfill facility in Rochester to address the presence of PFAS. The company operates an on-site facility that includes biological and chemical treatment processes that separate and sequester the PFAS from the leachate. In Vermont, the Agency of Natural Resources is working with Casella, who is the operator of the Juniper Ridge landfill here in Maine, to develop a pilot project to begin testing treatment technologies that can reduce and remove PFAS concentrations in landfill leachate. After the pilot project is complete, Vermont intends to scale up the project to manage all leachate generated from Vermont state landfills. The agency actually went through a very comprehensive scoping process to understand the effectiveness and costs of various treatment options and models. And I'd be happy to share that information with you as it'd be helpful for your discussions today and in the work session. Additionally, I would like to say I'm a little concerned by the department's point that they feel that the time is not ready. Last week on Thursday, CLF argued before the Board of Environmental Protection opposing the expansion of the Crossroads landfill. And one of our points was specifically the fact that the leachate generated from that facility, which is almost 500,000 gallons per day, is not being treated for PFAS. The department was receptive to our argument, as was the Board of Environmental Protection, but they pointed to the fact that they have no statutory authority to require pretreatment at this time. They were essentially telling us to make this argument for you, so it's a little concerning that the department seems to be backtracking. I would also note that the state has already gone above and beyond EPA in terms of PFAS standards. The EPA standard is 70 parts per trillion for drinking water, and the state has gone down from that at 20 parts per trillion, showing that we can and should be acting as immediately as possible to deal with these forever chemicals. Additionally, the treatment processes that generally treat leachate to address PFAS are generally a chain of reactions, not just one technology, but multiple technologies. So the concern that should the state move forward now and an additional, let's say, EPA standard comes out that is more stringent than whatever the state classifies, it's not talking about making the entire upgrades to, let's say, the Anson-Madison facility irrelevant. You just need to possibly add another type of technology into that treatment chain. So we can and should be moving forward now. In terms of the question of what you do with the filters for the various treatment options, there are ways to stabilize and sequester this material, and that is contained in the Vermont ANR report as well. Finally, I just note that as currently drafted, this only applies to state-owned landfill facilities, so the Juniper Ridge facility, but the presence of PFAS and leachate is something that is of significant concern for private facilities as well. We'd respectfully ask that you consider amending this legislation to apply to all landfills because this problem seriously cannot wait. This bill alone will not address the PFAS crisis. However, it is a significant step forward in how the state manages significant sources of PFAS contamination in our rivers and waterways. Therefore, CLF is urging the committee to vote ought to pass on LD 1875. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you so much, Peter Blair. Are there any questions from the committee? I have one question for you. If the committee were to amend this bill to apply to all landfills needing to test leachate for PFAS, are you also suggesting that we amend it to treat as well or just to test?
So testing is already required, I believe, under a law. So it would be for.
You're suggesting we amend it so that all leachate is treated?
Yes.
And do you believe that the state has the capacity to treat that much leachate?
I believe that if the state starts moving now and with the 3-year timeline outlined in this bill, there would be plenty of time to get the system up and running. As I've said, Waste Management, which operates the largest private landfill here in Maine, already has an on-site facility in New Hampshire. They're very familiar with how to get these processes up and running. The Anson-Madison District is already making improvements. So there, I believe, is enough time in this bill to make it work.
Are any of Casella's other facilities required to treat leachate for PFAS and PFOA, PFAS in other states?
Not that I know of, but with Vermont moving forward with the way they are, soon all leachate that comes into Vermont will be managed under this pilot project, which again will hopefully be scaled up in the next 2 years to apply to all leachate managed in the state. And Casella operates both the closed Central Vermont landfill and Coventry operating landfill in Vermont. And they're, I believe, discussing either upgrades to existing wastewater treatment facilities as part of this plan or developing their own on-site facility.
So you suspect within the business model of these landfill management companies that they have the capacity to do this?
I believe they have the capacity. They certainly have the funds. And I believe it's their responsibility since they're the ones creating the leachate.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, thanks for joining us. And I had invited Luke Sikora Flanders in to testify, but they declined. So if you are interested in coming in, I will invite you one more time. And if you're not, you could just put your hand down. That would be great. And in the meantime, Heather Spaulding is here to testify.
Good morning, Senator Brenner and Representative Tucker and members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. My name is Heather Spaulding and I'm Deputy Director of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, MOFCA. I've submitted written comments on this bill and I've also submitted comments in support of 1911. And I want to respect your time, so I'll save the bulk of my comments for the 1911 session. I would like to emphasize the urgency of environmental justice in our collective efforts to solve Maine's PFAS crisis. As the quantities of sludge added to the Juniper Ridge landfill increase, so does concern about the level of PFAS in leachate and the eventual release of PFAS into the Penobscot River. Juniper Ridge leachate contains PFAS 20 times higher than the state standard, and I just learned about the astounding level of PFAS in the Pine Tree landfill, also leaching into the Penobscot from Mr. Lippincott's testimony. For more than 16,000 years, the Penobscot people have lived in close relationship to the river, managing natural resources so that future generations could thrive. However, in a few hundred years, they've seen the destruction of precious land and water resources, and they've lost the ability to sustain themselves in traditional ways and now are faced with extreme pollution of their ancestral land and water. MOFCA supports economic, environmental, and social justice for all people involved in our food system, including those with who are most impacted by historic and present-day systemic oppression, including white supremacy, colonization, and extractive capitalism. The release of such vast quantities of toxic leachate from a state-owned facility directly into the sanctuary of the Penobscot Nation is a glaring example of systemic racism, and it's a travesty and it must be stopped. As we develop coordinated action to plan to prevent further PFAS contamination, it's imperative to take a precautionary approach, especially when it comes to historically underserved and marginalized communities that so often bear the brunt of environmental destruction. Thank you so much for all your work and leadership to address the PFAS problem in Maine.
Thank you, Heather Spalding. Are there any questions from the committee? All right, thanks for joining us. Next up is Luke Sikera Flanders. Let's see.
Hi, I'm trying to turn my camera on, but okay.
There you go. Try that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Welcome.
Senator Brenner, Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, members of the committee, thank you all for hearing me today. My name is Luke Sikera Flanders. I'm joining from Fryeburg, Maine, and I'm here in my capacity as a co-founder of Community Water Justice and a Changemakers Fellow with the Maine Environmental Education Association. I'm speaking today in favor of the proposed legislation. As you are all aware with the previous testimony, recent concerns with the effects of PFAS have peaked due to the widespread sludge spreading and other waste contaminating water, soil, and food. Studies on the matter continue to show a causative relationship between PFAS and various cancer types and weakened immune responses. PFAS requires specialized treatment in order to be safe for disposal, which Maine facilities are not currently capable of. Meanwhile, the state-owned landfill managed by Casella at Juniper Ridge is accepting out-of-state industrial waste that has been banned in other states in large part due to the dangers they pose to human health. Alongside the burden that PFAS places on small farms and the sustainability of local food systems, we should also consider the disproportionate impacts that PFAS pollution have on indigenous communities, with the Juniper Ridge landfill being located just upstream of the Penobscot Nation community on Indian Island. No matter how you look at this issue, there is no alternative to clean water. We must look at our waterways not as a sewage system, but as a life-sustaining gift, a gift which needs our most vigorous protection and is worthy of a significant undertaking. When the water and soil upon which we depend are being poisoned, it is absolutely necessary to act swiftly to protect human and environmental health. The prospects of further contamination and the lasting health effects of PFAS are terrifying, but the possibility of an effective response to begin to correct the state's past mistakes rests in your hands. One final note, as a youth, it is also disappointing to have heard so little discussion of the possibility of removing these forever chemicals from the production end of this equation, which must be a necessary component of pursuing environmental justice. We can filter as much as we would like, but the problem won't stop until we halt the flow of PFAS contaminated waste into our state. We must begin the process of completely removing PFAS from the products we consume altogether as well. For all these reasons, I urge you to vote ought to pass on both LD 1875 and LD 1911. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you so much for joining us. And just because I think it was such good work that we did as a committee last session, I want to point out that we did pass a bill that will limit products that contain PFAS from coming into the state in the future. It is challenging on the state level to limit production of products with those contaminants because of the Commerce Clause. Are there any questions from the committee? All right. Thanks for joining us. So appreciate your time this morning and your words. And next up is Mark Hyland. Did we lose him? Oh, goodness. Hold on, let's see what happened to him. Oh, he's not over there. We lost, oh, wait, let's see if we can, he's bouncing back and forth. Hold on, let's try this again. Hold on, Mark. Sorry about that. I think I might have. Welcome.
Thank you. Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, members of the committee. My name is Mark Hyland. I'm the board chair for Defend Our Health. I'm also a retired director for the Bureau of Remediation and Waste Management, the DEP, and as such have a lot of experience both in solid waste and toxics and things like that. I'll forego the part of the threat, because I think you've all heard that pretty well. But talk a little bit about the problem. And some have suggested that landfilling municipal and industrial sludge produced by our wastewater treatment plants will solve this problem. Unfortunately, landfills are not a closed loop system. Landfill leachate created by rainwater percolating through landfill waste and contaminated rainwater, the leachate, gets to the bottom of the landfill with contaminants, including PFAS, and needs to be treated. Decades of using PFAS in a variety of products, including cookware, clothing, furniture, food packaging, means that the trash in our landfills is loaded with PFAS and some ends up in the leachate. Multiple studies, and you've heard about a number of them now, both nationally and internationally, have thoroughly documented that there are high levels of PFAS in landfill leachate. And so when they're sent to a typical wastewater treatment facility, the PFAS and leachate is not removed. It doesn't react with the system's the aeration and anaerobic digestion types of systems that are found in wastewater treatment plants. And as you can imagine, because it's one of those forever chemicals, it doesn't react very well in those situations. So it ends up that most of the contaminants that the PFAS travels through the wastewater treatment plant unchanged. Some ends up in the sludge, but much of it is discharged in the effluent, and it presents a threat to our environment. Most landfill leachate contaminants are persistent, or the PFAS contaminants are persistent, and they're being discharged currently into the Penobscot River. More advanced treatment is necessary to remove PFAS from leachate. Unfortunately, there are options to do this, either by pre-treating it on site at the landfill before sending it to a wastewater treatment plant, or sending it to a wastewater treatment facility with more advanced capabilities. You've heard today, I know, about the federal funds that have been awarded to develop specialized treatment for PFAS at the Anson-Madison facility that could potentially meet this need. We believe that we must ensure that our state-owned landfill follows best practices for disposing of its leachate. And that means ensuring that it's appropriately treated for PFAS, either on-site or a facility capable of removing the PFAS from the leachate. Additionally, the status quo raises important environmental justice concerns. And you've heard about some of those today, that the leachate from the Juniper Ridge landfill is being discharged to the Penobscot River just downstream of the Penobscot Nation. So, and that's a concern to the Penobscot Nation, the fish in particular, because although there are fish advisories on the river, it's still something from a sustainability standpoint that people use fish from the river. So I worked for DEP for 29 years, and I did a lot of the testing, was involved in the testing for dioxin from the paper mills in the Penobscot River in the 1990s, PCB contamination from Eastern Fine Paper and Brewer, the coal tar contamination at the Bangor waterfront, and the mercury releases at the Holterton facility. All of those things have been dumped into the Penobscot River, and the Penobscot River has been a dumping ground long enough for toxic chemicals. The state needs to take the lead, and because the state owns this landfill, we should be the ones that are showing leadership for eliminating PFAS from state-owned facilities. We really can't landfill our way out of this problem, and we have to reduce the concentrations of these chemicals in the environment to protect people's health. It's much cheaper to address the problem before we discharge it rather than after we discharge it, at the large cost of cleaning up the Penobscot River from the Holterton facility point out. And the state landfills need to lead that effort. Thank you for your time, and I urge you to vote ought to pass on LD 1875. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Boyle has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hyland.
We heard testimony from the department. This may be awkward for in your excuse me, former position, but that's okay. I'm going to put you on the spot. I think that the department's opposition essentially seemed to boil down to it's going to cost quite a bit of money. Resources is the word used, but I think it's really money, number one. Number two, the EPA, the federal's already going to do something about it over a period of time, and they want to be able to match that. And number three, because EPA is going to do something anyway, let's the department work with them. Can you tell me, in your words, with your experience, why I should listen to the opponents of this bill rather than the proponents?
Surely, and Brian Kavanaugh is a good friend of mine, so we've been on opposite sides of issues like this before, so it's not the first time.
That's why I acknowledge the awkwardness.
Yeah, it's a little awkward, but you know, the realistic part is that that EPA, and I worked in the Superfund program for many years, EPA is kind of a stop-and-go operation. I mean, sometimes they're right on an issue, and then sometimes there's a big lull into when they take action. And it's not unusual for the state to, the states are kind of the, were the proving grounds for many ways of regulating things. I mean, EPA isn't the end all and be all for these things. Many times we're the proving ground, we show the way for EPA to take care of these situations. And certainly this is one of those examples where I think that we can really help EPA and come up with good standards for this. And that's by taking action first.
Any other questions from the committee?
I did hear a question at one point about disposal of the filtration material. I think Representative Bloom asked about that. The mm-hmm. only thing I can say to that is we put water systems on for all sorts of different contaminants, and PFAS is one of those things. Activated carbon is the normal thing that gets used. It does get disposed in landfills. Many times it gets incinerated because activated carbon is a decent fuel. But that's kind of the two methods that are used for disposing of material. Many times you can reactivate carbon and use it again, but I'm not sure how well that works when you have PFAS as one of the contaminants.
I have a question for you relative to the amendment that was proposed at the beginning of the hearing. Yeah. Do you believe that changing the language so that the target is at the drinking water standards would relieve the department from as much of a financial burden?
It does relieve the department of that burden. They don't have to do the rulemaking at that point. Mm-hmm. So that's a big help. And I think Mr. Kavanaugh admitted that as well. Mm-hmm. The difficulty is, as he points out, is that Anson-Madison will be designing a treatment system without being absolutely sure of what the final requirements will be. And that's why that's why he has difficulty with this, is it's, they would like to know before they build it, because it could make it more expensive or less expensive depending on how they do it. But I think there was a good point made earlier too by the person from Conservation Law Foundation, and that is that these treatment systems that treat contaminants, it's a chain. There are a lot of individual processes that happen during these things. And so adding something to treat PFAS towards the end of the process, because that's where it usually would have to be put, will make it less expensive to worry about that later.
Any other questions? All right, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, now we'll move on to anyone here to speak in opposition to the legislation, if you could raise your hand. All right, not seeing any. Anyone that's here to speak neither for nor against, if you could raise your hand. Okay, let's see, one person, Shelby Wright. I'll bring Shelby Wright over. And if there's anyone else here to speak about this piece of legislation, if you could raise your hand. Otherwise, I believe Shelby Wright, oh, there's one other person. Okay, Dawn Neptune Adams, I'm gonna bring you over as well. So if you're here to speak for 1875, if you could raise your hand. Welcome. Good morning. You're muted, Shelby Wright.
That's a first. So good morning, Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, and members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. My name is Shelby Wright, and I'm the Manager of Engagement for Casella. I'm also a resident of Hamden, and I've been listening very intently this morning to the proponents and the opposition, the DEP, to this bill. And I mean, it is, I am here actually to testify neither for nor against 1875. And I'm here as a problem solver and not a fault finder in hopes to offer a pathway forward that can help the state as a whole as it struggles to quantify and rectify the many challenges that PFAS presents to our environment. We stand with the sponsor and the DEP and other interested stakeholders to ensure that any approach to PFAS treatment is successful in the state. And as such, I just wanted to start with a couple of clarifications from testimony that we've heard this morning. So as you all know, the landfill does not generate PFAS. The materials that are delivered to the landfill do, and they are in the leachate. We are not arguing that point. Landfill leachate has PFAS, it is true. And LD 1600 has just established criteria by the DEP to test landfills throughout the state that manage leachate to determine the levels of PFAS that exist in untreated leachate. Our leachate is not released directly into the Penobscot River. It is treated at ND paper in an amount that makes up 1% of the total flow or effluent from that mill's discharge, 1%. Now, that is not belittling the fact that our leachate does contain PFAS, but it does bring light to the arguments that have been made today that there are also several other sources of PFAS that are escaping into our rivers and streams and drinking water and groundwater all over the state. We heard a very emotional testimony from Alan and Johanna from Unity. We heard some very interesting recommendations from Peter Blair earlier. And I would like to kind of take both of those and talk a little bit about what other states are doing and how we can be a leader in the PFAS remediation or treatment in Maine. So we heard Peter Blair talk a little bit about Vermont, and we heard Peter talk about what Casella is actually doing in Vermont. And it is true. The Vermont Agency of Natural Resources had a study conducted as a first step to determine potential PFAS sources and waste streams that were disposed at landfills. Now this study, which some of you have been circulated, does have some very interesting findings in the way that landfills can successfully sequester certain types of PFAS. Landfills are very, very good at sequestering PFAS from carpets, textiles, couches, oversized bulky waste, and construction and demolition debris. The other types of PFAS that are commonly found in untreated MSW tend to be the types that we find in the leachate from a landfill. And going back and hearkening back to the point that was made by Luke Sequeira Flanders, we believe and we totally support efforts to treat substances also at the source so that they aren't in the materials that we're buying, they're not in the materials that we're disposing of, and therefore they're not in our landfill or our landfill leachate. And that idea of going upstream is going to have some data driven behind it. And this is what Vermont sought to do. They collected 100 samples from waste streams suspecting of containing PFAS compounds, including sludge from municipal wastewater treatment plants and other industrial sources, sewer grit, contaminated soils, textiles from bulky waste, carpeting, construction and demolition debris, et cetera. They also began the process of requiring that the state's landfill, which was Coventry, managed by Casella, implement a pilot system to treat leachate for PFAS. Now, Coventry has 1 year to implement a pilot system and 2 years to report on the results of that program back to the VANR. And then the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources will use that data to help create actions to manage PFAS and the best course of that action. Now, we've been exploring a couple of different technologies We've been exploring reverse osmosis. We've been foam fractionalization, and as well as carbon filtering. When you treat for PFAS, what you end up doing is you get a hyper-concentrated amount of PFAS in the discharge or in the residual from the treatment, which goes back into the landfill. So a lot of these processes basically keep the PFAS sequestered in the landfill, as we said, as a cycle to go back in and go back in. Ironically, that's going to raise over the course of time the levels of PFAS found in the leachate because we're putting concentrated PFAS back in the leachate. And so these technologies have their certain challenges. And while they're in their infancy and being studied, I think it's really important to note that we are nowhere near the capacity of being able to flip a switch on an existing technology to successfully treat PFAS. But Vermont ultimately decided on that pilot program simply because the technology needed to treat that leachate is largely untested. But as I said, those options that do exist require the landfill to continue to sequester that PFAS and capture it back in. So while our leachate is not discharged into the river directly, and we do know that it does have levels of PFAS, we don't know what the effluent has in it, as there are no standards and no testing for wastewater treatment plants discharge or the amount of PFAS therein who are required by the state. And so we would recommend that a standard be applied, testing be implemented, and a standard would be applied to wastewater treatment plants so that we can accurately pinpoint where the sources of PFAS are coming from and then act as a state holistically to address them. And the bigger the offenders, the more attention or priority the DEP would place on them. And that expanded universe of data is not artificially limited just by a couple of sources. And the department, you know, they're testing leachate in 1600. We need to allow that bill to collect those data. And our testing requirements should also consider all landfills, not just, you know, the ones that are land lined, but perhaps groundwater around many of the landfills, unlined landfills in Maine. Other states have sought to identify these levels and sources of PFAS. We've heard a lot about Michigan, we've heard a lot about Vermont, and they've used this data to base their data-based facts to set quality levels because they know where the problem is and they know the sources and they know the levels of PFAS contamination. So they're able to address them with more priority and more data-driven science to set parts per trillion levels as far as water quality standards go. So we should expand on that universe of data and follow Vermont's model and expand on the bill so that it is more holistic in an approach to PFAS, because even though we are looking at the state-owned landfill right now, there are five licensed industrial discharge facilities upriver from the Penobscot Nation above Old Town. And we don't know what their effluent has in PFAS. And even if we treat the landfill leachate, we are not addressing the problem of PFAS being contaminating in our rivers and streams throughout the state in a holistic enough approach. It would be a drop in the bucket, and we need to do more. We need to do more. And Casella is here to try to help lead that with the research and the studies that we've been doing in Vermont and the technology that we're working on in pilot programs. And we'll be willing to share that information on a pilot study here at Juniper Ridge Landfill and share that with the DEP to move forward. Thank you. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions from the committee for Shelby Wright? All right, not seeing any. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so very much for your time today, folks.
One person on the phone who we're going to hear from.
Chairs Brenner and Tucker and other members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. I'm testifying in support of LD 1875. I have read the amendment and I support that as well. This bill, of course, would mandate treatment of leachate from our state-owned Juniper Ridge landfill. These forever chemicals have become more and more understood, and the problem seems to keep growing, the scope of it, over the last, 5-6 years. The other thing, I don't see the DEP's testimony as a large obstacle here. I think you can work something out with them. And one of the things in there, they spoke about costs of treatment. Well, the state-owned landfill has an operating services agreement with Casella, whereby Casella is to bear all of the costs, 100%. So if this treatment facility was to be built right at the landfill, I think that would be Casella's responsibility. So a little bit more on current leachate practices. The wastewater treatment plant at the pulp mill in Old Town is not really.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions from the committee for Shelby Wright? Right, not seeing any. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so very much for your time today, folks.
One person on the phone who we're going to hear from. Okay, let's see if we can get this to work. Hello there, can you hear us? Hello there, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We sure can. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, yes. There's Brenner and Tucker and other members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. I'm testifying in support of LD 1875. I have read the amendment and I support that as well. This bill, of course, would mandate treatment of leachate from our state-owned Juniper Ridge landfill. These forever chemicals have become more and more understood, and the problem seems to keep growing, the scope of it, over the last, 5-6 years. The other thing, I don't see the DEP's testimony as a large obstacle here. I think you can work something out with them. And one of the things in there, they spoke about costs of treatment. Well, the state-owned landfill has an operating services agreement with Casella, whereby Casella is to bear all of the costs, 100%. So if this treatment facility was to be built right at the landfill, I think that would be Casella's responsibility. So a little bit more on current leachate practices. The wastewater treatment plant at the pulp mill in Old Town is not really built to screen, to remove these harmful chemicals. That needs to happen. And I'm glad to hear Shelby Wright in favor of more testing of their effluent. Currently, it's only tested once a year and for less than a dozen compounds. So that's a positive thing. I urge you to pass this without delay. We just need to get going on this. I think Peter Blair's testimony in particular is comprehensive and gives us some ideas moving forward. So I guess I'll leave it at that. I know you've got a lot of other issues to come up later in the day here. So I thank you all for your time, and I want to thank all the testifiers out there for doing such a great job and being together on this. And lastly, I want to thank Representative Ziegler for carrying the ball forward to this point, and now it's our obligation to run with it. Excuse the football analogy, but thank you again.
I know that you're Ed Spencer, but I just, for the public and for the committee's purposes, want to make sure everyone knows that it's Ed Spencer on the phone, correct?
Correct, and I live in Old Town, about a mile and three quarters from Juniper Ridge.
And your compliment to Representative Ziegler, I'm just going to let you know, because you can't see him, there was a little twinkle in his eye when you said it. So thank you so much.
Well, good. It's nice to get some acknowledgement after all the hard work. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee for Mr. Spencer? All right, not seeing any. Thanks for joining us this morning. There's one more hand up for speaking on 1875. Dawn Neptune Adams, welcome.
Welcome to you. Hello, Senator Brenner, Representative Tucker, and members of the community. My name is Dawn Neptune Adams. I am a member of the Penobscot Nation and also a member of Sunlight Media Collective. I live in Penobscot Territory, right near the river. And I am here today to speak in favor of 1875. I'm going to keep my comments brief because you've already heard all of the information that you need to know, especially from Dan's presentation from the Penobscot Nation Natural Resources Department. One thing that I would like to speak on is that we do indeed eat the fish out of the river. We can't just stop eating the fish. It's part of our culture. We have treaty reserve sustenance fishing rights, which are useless if the fish are too poisonous to eat. And to continue to pollute the river is to continue the genocide that has happened here since colonization began more than 400 years ago. I'd like everyone to do everything they possibly can to make sure that the fish are safe to eat. One of the things Penobscot Elder Kathy Paul has repeated over and over again is that we need to limit the out-of-state waste from coming here. That would lessen the burden on the state-owned landfill, and it would lessen the chemicals that are going into the water. In 1999, levels of cancer in our community were 5 times higher than the surrounding communities made up of non-native people. And it's because we eat the fish. I want to thank you for your time today and for to all of you. Thank you, enjoy the weather and have a great day.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee for Dawn Neptune Adams? All right, not seeing any, thank you. I believe you close out our conversation this morning about 1875.
Thanks. Zite ago mukik, all our relations.
Okay, and with that, we'll close our hearing on 1875. Is there anything the committee would like to request for the work session that will be scheduled at a later date that hasn't already been mentioned? All right, I'll have you send your requests to Dan if you haven't come up with them yet. I'm gonna suggest a 3-minute break and then we will get started with our public hearing on 1911.